Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and of course Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, the films The Substance, The Critic, and His Three Daughters.
I'd like to start off with a movie called The Substance, which is getting a whole lot of talk these days. And it has been getting talk, actually, since it showed at the Cannes Film Festival a few months ago, where it won the prize for best screenplay. It's a French film. It was directed by a woman named Coralie Forget. And I think it's an absolutely terrible movie. I think it's simply awful. A lot of people, it seems, really love the film. Okay, that's nice. I know that there are plenty of other people like me who really, really, really don't like it. But I just didn't like this movie at all. So I would like to say a little bit about why. But first of all, a little bit about what it's about. It's a science fiction movie. It's really a horror movie, a body horror movie. I think, among other things, David Cronenberg is such a looming presence over this film. He's been doing this kind of thing for decades and doing it better. Anyway, that's the kind of movie that this is, sort of a science fiction horror film. So we have our main character, who is a big TV star. She is played by Demi Moore. At least she's played by Demi Moore at the beginning of the movie and some parts of the movie along the way. And she is one of these Jane Fonda types who has one of these big TV workout shows where she and her team of other women dress up in scanty costumes and they do all the exercise moves, and the people at home watching on their sets can follow the moves and get in shape and all of that. So that's just fine. However, our main character, her name is Elizabeth Sparkle. She's getting old. And her producer, the guy who actually runs the whole thing, he's sort of the network head, I guess, played by Dennis Quaid, he decides that it's time to replace her. And we find this out in an early scene in the movie when the women's room is out of order at the network, and Elizabeth Sparkle has to go to the bathroom. She goes into the men's room and goes into one of the little stalls and closes the door, at which point, very conveniently, the head of the network, Dennis Quaid's character, comes in and shouts everything that he's going to do and get rid of her and all that into his phone, not knowing that she is overhearing. This is the kind of thing that does not, to my mind, amount to very original or inventive or good screenwriting. Anyway, what's she going to do? Well, immediately after that, another great coincidence strikes. She is in a terrible car accident. She is not hurt at all. But she is x-rayed and examined by some physicians, and one of them says, "You might be a good candidate." She says, "Good candidate for what?" And he doesn't tell her, but soon she finds out. She gets some mysterious messages, and it turns out that there is, yes, a substance which she can get a hold of. It's actually kind of a bunch of substances, but they call it the substance. And with this, she can sort of divide herself between two different bodies, her own ordinary older body and then a young, gorgeous, younger body. Okay, so she does that. She takes the substance, she undergoes this process, but it's complicated. For one thing, she can only have the new body every 7 days, and then she has to go back to the old body, and then the young body for 7 days, and then the old body for 7 days. And she has to keep this schedule rigorously. There's a little bit of other stuff involved too, but okay. With her new body, she goes and she auditions to be her own replacement on the show. Of course, nobody knows that this is actually still Elizabeth Sparkle. She now calls herself Sue. And again, she's young. And by the way, she's played by a totally different actor. She's played now by Margaret Qualley. So, okay. Now she auditions in her new body, in her new name, for her to be her own replacement. She gets the job. By the way, that's another coincidence. She wouldn't necessarily have gotten the job. There are other people out there who could do it, I'm sure. But she gets the job. However, how do you be the star of a great big regularly broadcast TV thing when you, every 7 days, you have to switch to the other body for a week? So that turns out to be a thing. She makes a little excuse about that. Oh, I have to care for my sick mother every other week for 7 days. All right, she gets away with that. However, this being a body horror film, and this being a film which I think is not very original, of course it turns into one of these things where the substance goes wrong. She doesn't exactly obey the schedule. The consequences turn out to be gigantic. And before you know it, well, I won't say before you know it, but well before the end, she is now turning into a monster, a horrible, hideous-looking creature full of deformation and distortion and all of that. But in the meantime, she's trying to keep her TV show going under her new supersona. So that's what it's about. So where does this all end up? Well, I'm not going to give any spoilers here. I just do want to say that by the end of the movie, we are in a situation, it reminded me now a little bit of Carrie, where everything gets soaked with blood. But it is not just soaked with blood. Blood is spewing, blood is flowing, blood is gushing from every direction, everywhere. It's not entirely clear why or how this is happening. It just is happening, and it gets the movie to a spectacular and, to my mind, absolutely idiotic conclusion. Now, I'll tell you the main reason why I didn't like The Substance. I have nothing against body horror movies and all that. However, from the very beginning, when Dennis Quaid comes into that restroom and starts yelling into his cell phone, this is the way the movie presents it. His face fills the entire movie screen, and with a distorting wide-angle lens, and he is shouting. Okay, so there we have it. Visual overkill, verbal overkill, everything, image and sound, too much, too much, too much. Then the whole movie continues like that. Everything is overdone, overcooked, overdirected, overacted. Margaret Qualley keeps her performance more or less under control. Demi Moore keeps her performance more or less under control. Dennis Quaid never, ever keeps his performance under control. But just by and large, this is a movie which visually and sonically shouts all the time. The images push into your face, the sound barges into your ears, and well, I just really, really didn't like it from the beginning, and it never got any better. Plus the fact that I find the story to be really derivative. Again, David Cronenberg, a little bit of Brian De Palma and Carrie. Oh my gosh. So I really recommend staying away from The Substance. And even if this doesn't sound like an off-putting review that I've just given, bear in mind that it has got so much blood in it near the end. If that's going to bother you, stay away for that reason too. That didn't bother me particularly, except that it just seems so irrational and, again, such overkill, literally overkill. So I say stay away from The Substance. It is not a good movie. Next movie, somewhat better, The Critic. This is a movie directed by Anand Tucker, who's made quite a few films before now, and it stars the very, very terrific Ian McKellen. He is now in his middle 80s, and he just keeps rolling along, and he's a fabulous actor. And it's just a pleasure to see him. That's one of the reasons why I really liked The Critic, or at least I liked a great deal about it. Also, of course, it's a movie about a critic. Hey, I'm a critic. I've been a critic for a very, very long time, many decades, in fact. I'm still a critic, and I've been a critic of different kinds, a newspaper critic. I've written for magazines, this and that. So I know my way around the critical landscape. In this case, Ian McKellen is a slightly different kind of a critic from the kind that I've been, because he's a theater critic. I have been a theater critic, but I've been mainly a film critic and somewhat a music critic over the years, but that's what he does. And he works for a tabloid newspaper in London. Because this is very much about the British newspaper scene, along with being about specifically a critic. Now, this critic is different from me in a couple of ways. First of all, he's somewhat older than I am, and also he is a very gay man, as a lot of critics are, and that gets him into a lot of trouble. He already is in a certain amount of hot water with the tabloid that he works for because his reviews are so savage. When he doesn't like a show, when he doesn't like a performer, when he doesn't like a director, when he doesn't like, he is absolutely unbridled in his scathingly negative opinions. And this is, he's so negative, so scathingly negative, that he gets in trouble with his editor. Even though this is a British tabloid, the editor, who, by the way, is a member of the peerage, he's a Viscount, and he's new on the job. He inherited the paper from his father, who dies very early in the film. Even though it's a British tabloid, and they're known for being pretty unbridled, oh my gosh, this critic, his name, by the way, is Jimmy Erskine. It's just too much for his new editor. Tone it down, Jimmy, says the new editor. Don't be so scathing in everything you write. And Jimmy tries a little bit to tone things down, but he doesn't really quite succeed. But then something happens more decisive for his career. The old elderly critic and his lover, who's also his secretary, get busted for being gay. This movie takes place back in the 1930s, when it was literally illegal to be homosexual in England. So that happens there. I should mention that one of Erskine's heroes is Oscar Wilde, who of course got in terrible trouble and had his own life ruined for being gay. So it's the kind of thing that really, really could happen all those decades ago. And it happens to Jimmy Erskine, the critic. So what does he do then? This is when the movie turns into real movie stuff here. He goes to a young actress who he has been giving very savage reviews to, and he says, "Hey, guess what? I will give you rave reviews. I will love everything you do. I will write in my columns that you are a sensational, beautiful, magnificent actor if you will just seduce my editor so that I can blackmail him." And yes, this does happen. So that's basically what this movie is. It is a movie a little bit about the theater, a little bit about being a critic, a little bit, well, quite a bit, about being gay back in England in the 1930s, and very much about blackmail. And the whole thing moves along, and I'm not going to give any spoilers here again, but I will say that more than one person dies before the end of the movie. And that's when the movie, I think, gets a little bit over the top. It's told with fair restraint. The story is reasonably within bounds, but ultimately it just gets a bit overly melodramatic. There is just a little bit too much stuff going on here, a little bit too much chicanery and deception and duplicity, and a little bit too much death before the end of the movie. That said, it's a very well-acted movie. Mark Strong is very good as the editor. And I have to say, Gemma Arterton is very, very good as the young actress who gets roped into this plot, which she then participates in. But Ian McKellen is just always a pleasure to watch as the critic, as the title character. Again, I think the movie is a bit melodramatic. I wish it weren't quite so overly melodramatic, actually. But it's told in a reasonably strained way for a melodrama. And again, the opportunity to watch Ian McKellen in a really serious role to which he gives his all is just a pleasure. So I had a pretty good time. Not a great, great, great time, but a pretty good time watching The Critic. And it's kind of fun to see a movie about a critic every once in a while. I recommend it. Our final movie today, His Three Daughters. This is a movie written and directed by Azazel Jacobs, who is a fairly new filmmaker. I really like his first film several years ago, which is called Terry, about a young man with various complications in his life. And since then, I haven't been quite so impressed with Azazel Jacobs. I want to mention, sort of parenthetically here, that Azazel's father, Ken Jacobs, is an old friend of mine. He is one of the leading avant-garde, non-narrative experimental filmmakers in the world, and has been so for decades and decades. So it's interesting that his son Azazel is turning into a real commercial director and a pretty good one. His Three Daughters is a pretty good film. It's on Netflix. It's easy to find. So here is what His Three Daughters is about. A man is very, very ill and almost certainly dying. In his very nice New York City apartment, his three daughters have gotten together for the first time in a long time to figure out what they're going to do, to sort of take care of him while he is dying, to decide what they're going to do with his estate, his apartment, and all of that. And of course, the three daughters turn out to have very strong differences among the three of them. I should mention they are played by good, good actors. Carrie Coon, Natasha Lyonne, and Elizabeth Olsen are very good as the three daughters. So, one of the daughters is kind of an irresponsible, grown-up hippie type. The other two are pretty responsible, but they have tensions in their own lives. One of them has come from a great distance. The other one lives much nearer by. They have all these differences among them, but now they have to get together and they have to get along for at least a little while this death takes place. And also in the picture is the father is in hospice care. He's at home in hospice, and the hospice supervisor is around. That he's a secondary character in the movie, and then his assistant is a tertiary character, a very minor character, but she's there. So that is what this movie is about. And we have the relationships among these three daughters and about the old man. And I will now just reveal, we don't see the old man until very, very late in the film, but we do eventually see him. So he gets to play a little bit of a part in the story as well. Although actually he is the center of the whole story, since through almost the whole movie, he is dying there in the other room. It's a very nice movie. It's a very well-acted movie. It has some high drama in it. It has some very sad material in it. It attempts to get optimistic and happier near the end. I think it doesn't quite succeed. And then it ends up with, I think, it's a very realistic and not entirely upbeat ending. So it's an interesting movie with shifting moods. Above all, it's a very well-acted movie. If you want to see these three actors, Carrie Coon, Natasha Lyonne, and Elizabeth Olsen, do really, really good work individually and as an ensemble, then His Three Daughters is the movie to see. And if you want to see a movie that deals in a sensitive and caring way with the terribly fraught subject of death and dying, then His Three Daughters is really something that you might want to check out. Again, on Netflix, it's a pretty good movie. So that is my somewhat varied story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, The Films, The Substance, The Critic, His Three Daughters.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.